Jonathan.
Oh, you can see me. Excellent. Hi.
Hi.
Yay.
How are you?
That's a very deep question. Maybe I'll give the next talk on that subject.
Ajahn, can we ask for a favor, please? We have
yes?
A box of eye mask.
Shoes?
iPad, Ajahn.
Okay.
I'm on iPad. Since we came, would like you to bless it so that we can.
Okay.
Have fun as well as for your upcoming retreat.
Okay.
I've heard that your energy travels over the waves.
And I know that if I send all the energy over the waves, it will bust all those lines. They will overload the cables, and the satellite dishes and everything else will start to fry. It would be too much energy.
And this would be the most blessed I'm at, and we would be very blessed. Thank you, Ajahn.
Okay. Here we go. Here comes the iPad blessing chant.
Hey.
Sabaloka Winimuto Sabasanta Powajito Sabawera Mati Gando Nibuto Chatuangboa Sabitio Wiwa Chantu Sabaloko Vinasatu mate bhavan vantarayo sukhiti gayu gopava apivadana silitsa nichang vutta pacharino chattaro dhamma vatanti ayu vano sukhang balang natime saranang anyang buddhome Savanang Varang Etena Satcha Vajena Sotite Hotu Sabada Natime Savanang Anyang Dhammo Me Savanang Varang Etena Satcha Vajena Sotite Hotu Sabada Natime Savanang Anyang Sangho Me Savanang Varang Etena Satcha Vajena Sotite hotu sabada.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
I'm glad you still remember how to do sadhu properly. Well done.
Thank you, Ajahn. Thank you. How is the COVID situation in Bodhiyana?
Oh, because of all of the powers. It's no problem. No, over here, everything is just fine. There's no one with COVID within a lot of miles from here. And no community transmission. The only people who have COVID are coming from overseas. So everything is fine over here.
Yep.
How are things in Singapore? How are things in Singapore?
One or two communal cases and lots of imported cases. Like the 10 a day for imported cases. Community cases usually one or two, sometimes zero.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, community is good. But imported people are coming in with COVID.
Oh.
So, Ajahn, we will, when the live streaming starts at 3, a bit of echo.
Ajahn, is the sound okay on your side? Is there any echo?
Yes, there is, yeah. There is echo, yes.
Okay. Are we clear enough? Are we clear?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you okay. But there is some echo.
Okay. We are trying, because now it's a live audience plus trying to live stream it on YouTube.
Very good.
Oh, and Facebook as well.
And Facebook as well. Amazing.
Ajahn, we are very honored. Thank you so much to take up your precious time to help us.
Oh, yes.
So generous. As usual, thank you so much.
Generosity is one of the important parts of the Dhamma. Were we to serve one another? So why not?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Ajahn. So we will start with the three messages and five precepts. And Ajahn, I'm not very good at chanting, so may I just request in English? Would that be okay with you?
Yes, you can. Do you want me to do the three refuges and the five precepts in English too? Or in the Pali?
In Pali we'll do.
Okay.
The rest will follow.
So, whenever you're ready, no rush.
5 minutes before we go live, so we will do it together with the live audience. For the rest of you here, please repeat after Ajahn and not together with Ajahn. Just to clarify, when we usually do it by ourselves, then we do it together with the MC. But since Ajahn is giving us the refuges and the five precepts, we will repeat after him. Okay? Thank you.
Okay.
And Ajahn, you probably can't see them because they're very tiny, but Brother Upo is here, and Auntie Hasanti, and Brother Vincent, Brother Thomas, we are all here. Very happy to see you. And Brother Chandra.
Ah, the usual suspects.
Usual suspects. Ajahn Brahmali has told us not to say the five refuges and the three precepts. And, at the end, may we request also for blessing and merit, and then and sharing of merit, and then we should be able to end there.
Very good. But we're not at the end yet.
No,
we will do one state at a time.
Yes.
And just for your information, that this image here is in my office next to my cave. My cave, I never put any electronic equipment in there because it's a place where I meditate. But here is my cave. And if you can see just to the right of my face, there's a little map there, and that's all of the places in Bodhinyana Monastery, Jhana Grove, where we practice. And on towards the left of my head, you can just about see it on the other side. It's not clear enough, but it's a photo of Ajahn Chah. So those are just a couple of things I have just in this image.
Oh, beautiful. So the map is where you hide out.
Yes. that's my sphere of influence.
Yes, but I think your cave is really, it's really very peaceful
and serene.
Very serene. But the thing that took up most of our attention was the Buddha image is really magnificent.
Oh, in the cave, yeah. That's one which we commissioned to make many, many years ago. And I do believe you've got one of those in your shrine in the Yeo's building, the Buddhist BF. That's actually, we commission these at the same time, and I think you've got at least one of those there.
The little bronze one.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Yes, yes.
And you have another one there, which I always check when I go to visit to make sure it's still there. And it was one which was given to me by the late King Sihanouk in Khmer Republic in Cambodia many years ago. And I thought it'd be wonderful to leave it in Singapore to show that the Buddhist Fellowship is not just Singaporean, but it has people listening from all over the world and is supported by many people in different countries.
Wow, Ajahn, I didn't know that. You have to point it out to me.
Yeah.
We have quite a few, but I don't know which one.
Well, next time I go there, I will just point it out to you. But I always check to make sure it's still there. And it always is. It's like a stone one, but it's actually like a greeny colour. Small, but very nice.
Ajahn, I believe also you have donated some relics to us in the past.
Yes, I remember that because there's some of the members of the Buddhist Fellowship, they weren't so believing in things like relics. So I made sure I bought some and gave them to them. And only about after 1 week or 2 weeks, you called me or emailed me and said, it's amazing, because in one of those sealed relic containers, an extra couple of relics had appeared. They multiplied. And it's wonderful for people in Singapore to see that. That if you are a good Buddhist organization and you do lots of good things, then somehow or other these relics multiply.
Yes, I always remember you said that if we keep our precepts, then the relics can manifest in that way.
Yeah. Which is, please remember, I was a theoretical physicist. So I can't explain it, but I've seen it happen too many times to know that there's something which is real happening there.
Wow. Yeah, that's certainly amazing. But actually, the generations have passed, and I shouldn't say that. The presidents are not that old. But I actually don't know which one, so you should point it out to us when you come again.
Okay, yes. Will do.
Okay, Ajahn, it's past 3. May we have your permission to start?
Yes. Please, go ahead.
Thank you, Ajahn. Welcome to the Buddhist Fellowship Sunday service. Today we are very fortunate, very delighted, and very happy to have Ajahn Brahm to Zoom all the way from Perth to Singapore. Sadhu, Ajahn.
Very good.
Ajahn, may I also introduce you with your BF, bio, please?
Yes.
So I'm sure everyone is already very familiar with our great teacher and spiritual patron, Ajahn Brahm. But to those who are new, welcome, and let me give you a quick introduction. Ajahn Brahm is the abbot of Bodhiyana Monastery in Perth, Western Australia. He's the spiritual patron of the Buddhist Fellowship and has always forgiven our misbehaviors. He graduated with a degree in theoretical physics from Cambridge University, after which he trained under the late Ajahn Chah and has spent more than 40 years in the Theravada forest tradition and has used many of those years saving many lives by teaching us how to live well and meditate well.
Very good. So here come the three refugees. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Now you. Hey, did you hear that? I'll start again.
Okay,
we start again. So we do one line at a time. So I do Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, then you do Buddhang Saranang Gacchami.
Yes.
So here we go again. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami.
Buddhang Saranang Gacchami.
Dhammang Saranang Gacchami.
Dhammang Saranang Gacchami.
Sanghang Saranang Gacchami.
Sanghang Saranang Gacchami.
Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami.
Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami.
Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami.
Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami.
Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami.
Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami.
Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami.
Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami.
Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami.
Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami.
Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami.
Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami.
That completes the three refuges. I will now give the five precepts. Panatipata. Veramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami.
Panatipata Veramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami.
Adinadana Veramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami.
Adinadana Veramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami.
Kamesu Michachara Veramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami.
Kamesu Michachara Veramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami.
Musawada Veramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami.
Musavada Veramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami.
Sura Miraya Majapamadatana Veramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami.
Sura Miraya Majapamadatana Veramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami.
Imani Pancha Sikkhapadani Silena Sukhatin Yanti Silena Bhoga Samatha Silena Nipputin Yanti Tasma Silang Visodaye.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Very good.
Thank you so much, Ajahn. May I now invite Ajahn Brahm to give us another exciting, uplifting, and inspiring talk. But before that, can we invite Ajahn to give us, maybe lead us in 10 minutes of meditation? Thank you, Ajahn. Over to you.
Very good. So now you can put the microphone down and And you can sit down comfortably on your chair or on the cushion and allow your eyes to close. It's only for 10 minutes. And with your eyes closed, bring kindfulness to your body. How are your legs positioned right now? And if you need to move them, please do. To complete the final adjustments of the legs, making sure you know how they feel and you pay attention to them. And then to your bottom, sitting on the chair or the cushion. Is that comfortable? If you don't pay attention and kindness to your bottom when you start meditation, it can become very sore later on. A few seconds of kindfulness now save a lot of destructive pain. And then you become aware, mindful of your back. The back sometimes has a lot of injuries and pain. How does your back feel right now? And be prepared to adjust that too, to move it forward, to move it back. Stretch it until your back feels as comfortable as possible. When I'm saying these things, I'm doing it as well, feeling the comfort of my back and relaxing it. And then when I get to my shoulders, I imagine my shoulders like these groups of muscles and sinews, and so often they get stretched and they get sore. But I imagine these two bundles of muscles, which I imagine that they have been pulled apart, and now I let go of both ends and allow them to relax to the max. As the muscles release all their tension. And I go to my hands, which I have the right hand over the left hand, but you don't have to do it that way. However your hands feel comfortable. And then go back up to the neck to make sure that your head is well balanced on top of the neck so there's no aches and pains in the neck. And lastly, as you go to your head, I tried this out with some meditators on a retreat which I just finished in Jhana Grove. Imagine just lifting up the skull like it was on a hinge just above your left ear and opening it up and taking out your poor brain, which has been tired, overworked, thinking too much, taking it out of your skull. And just putting it on a nice cushion next to you. So your brain does not have to work. And can take a rest. A well-deserved holiday during this period of meditation. It's okay, you can put your brain in there afterwards. But during the meditation, it's not the time to work things out. To think and... You bother the brain too much, so now give the brain a rest. And now you have relaxed the body as much as you can. Can you be aware of your body just sitting here? As a whole, the whole body, relaxing, opening up, becoming at ease. And if there's any part of your body which has an ache or a pain, just focus there. Zoom in at that part of your body and give it as much loving kindness as you can to relax it and bring it to a state of peace. After a while, you can become very skillful of watching a part of the body which has been injured or is bruised or hurting. To be able to focus on that and give it so much relaxing energy. You can feel the ache, the pain get less and less and less until the pain vanishes. You've relaxed it deeply. And once the body is relaxed, then we go inside to our mind. And to start off with this thing which I call the peace-o-meter. How peaceful are you? Or how agitated are you? And give it a number from 1 to 10. 1 means really peaceful, 10 means agitated. How peaceful or agitated are you right now? What do you need to do to bring that reading on the peaceometer of your mind, to bring that reading down so it gets more peaceful? It's always the case that when we worry about the future, when we keep bringing up the past, that causes our mind to get more anxious. So no past, no future, just this present moment. I'm going to be quiet for a minute as I allow you to come into this moment. As you come into this moment, be careful not to start thinking. Keep silence in your room and also inside your mind. And listen to experience rather than trying to think about it or trying to describe it. Just to know without giving it a name. And then if you wish, you may invite your breath in to your conscious awareness now. As you breathe in, just be aware of the breath coming in. As you breathe out, be aware as it goes out. As you breathe in, you may imagine breathing in peace, health, or whatever else you wish to bring into your body or mind. And as you breathe out disturbance, illness, tiredness. Breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. Breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. As you breathe in peace, what does peace feel like? Can you see and appreciate the delight, the joy of peace? As you let go, breathing out, let go. When you let go of things, especially negative things, is how that makes the mind very light and free. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. I will now be quiet for 2 minutes before we do this short meditation. So how do you feel right now? How peaceful is your mind? And how joyful is that peace? And how relaxed is the body? Your mind may not be totally at peace. Your body not totally relaxed. But it's more relaxed and your mind is more peaceful than when you began. It's meditation. Very joyful thing to do. So now if you would open your eyes to come out from the meditation. Very good. Yeah, very good.
May I now invite Ajahn to give us a talk called and titled Going Beyond Karma. Thank you, Ajahn Brahm.
Excellent. So you can all now relax to the max. And hopefully you don't fall asleep when I'm giving the talk. Because usually when I give a talk in public, there's lots of people there and I can look at you all when I scan your faces. And if it's the case that people are falling asleep, I usually tell a funny story or I change the tone of my voice. Either way, it makes the talk a little bit more interesting so people can enjoy it rather than falling asleep. I do know that sometimes the talk or maybe the tone of my voice is so comforting, so reassuring, that many people have told me. They tell me that they listen to my talks before they go to bed at night. It helps them go to sleep. And some of them, they listen to my talk every night. Some of them, even when I was in Berkeley at a conference, one of the GCBs, the Global Conferences on Buddhism, that the MC who invited me, when she gave the introduction, she said, I would now like to introduce Ajahn Brahm. And then she said that she goes to bed with me every night. I thought, what? You can't say that. I don't do things like that. I'm a good monk. And then she explained that she listens to my talks every night. It helps her to go to sleep. So whatever. As long as it's reassuring, that's wonderful. But the topic of the talk to going beyond karma, when you gave me a list of possible talks, I thought, what on earth do they mean by that? And I thought, that's an interesting topic. So an interesting topic that usually gets my votes and I want to talk about it. So there's many people that it's not that they misunderstand karma and how it works. It's just they misuse the law of karma and they don't make use of it in such a way to give themselves peace and happiness and success in life. So for the purpose of this talk, you won't find this explanation in the books. If you could find this explanation in the books, there would be not much point inviting me to give the talk. It doesn't contradict what the Buddha said, but it just adds to it, interprets it in a way which makes the teachings more useful for you. So, for the purpose of this talk, I'm going to talk about four types of karma. Very easy to understand. The first and second type of karma is the past karma, which has been not that good and causes you trouble, bad past karma. And the second type of karma is good past karma, all the wonderful things you've done. And then the karma bad welcome, which creates wonderful things. So those are the four types of karma. Hey, can you hear okay? Hopefully. Yep.
Ajahn, can you please repeat that? Because,
okay. Here it comes again. The four types of karma. The good past karma, bad past karma. The good present karma, bad present karma. Yeah. Okay, very good. So, what do I mean by that? So why do I make that distinction? It is because of many people, when they talk about karma, they only really mean the bad past karma you've done. And people think, oh my goodness, I've done this, I've done that, it must have been very bad, all the terrible things which we've done. And that's all you ever remember. And sometimes that's all we're really concerned about. And you cannot change the past. You have to let the past go. Why? Because it cannot be fixed. And the simile which I give to make it extremely clear is that simile when I did my examinations, the final examinations at Cambridge University in theoretical physics. And after doing the morning exam, instead of having lunch, I would go to my room to meditate. I needed to relax and to refresh my brain. I know that many people, when they want to relax, go to the toilet, flush up their face, put water on their face. But I relax by going to a quiet place and just closing my eyes to meditate. It's much more cleansing, not just of the outside, but the inside as well. But anyway, when I started meditating, all I could think about was the morning exam. How had I done? Did I answer the questions correctly? And I use this simile because everybody knows it's obvious that once that exam is finished, once you've submitted your answered questions on the paper, that's it. Good or bad, it's finished. You can't change it. But even though I couldn't change it, you still worried about it. Until you realized just how much I was tiring yourself in the present. I had another exam to do in the afternoon. I couldn't waste time in worrying about something I could not change. The morning exam. And that's like, you know, human beings today. Even though whatever happened in the past is done and finished and you can't travel back in time to change to it, still people worry about it. What a waste of mental energy that is. So we encourage people, please get past the unfortunate karma of the past and even some of the good karma in the past. See if you can let that go to be free, because it's a burden on you. The other simile I often use with the karma from the past is just your memory. Why is it people always tend to remember the bad things which happened? You know, in your family, you have a nice partner in life, and why can't you live with them? Why is it when you get married, you commit, I will love you for all my life till death us do part, but maybe next year, a couple of years, 3 years, you find it's very difficult to live with them. Why? And I've often noticed this, that, you know, if you do get married, if you do have a child, if you have a kid, you don't know what that kid's going to be. They come into your life. You don't have a choice. They're there. They're born. They've got your name. You have to look after them. And sometimes it's like pot luck. What you get. Sometimes you get a very nice kid. Sometimes it's very, very difficult. But whatever it is, you have to look after them. And you learn how to love them. But with a partner, a husband or a wife, you don't just take them off whatever comes your way. You go out with them. You talk with them. You eat with them. You do test drives with them. And then after a while, then you decide to commit. With all of that research, you still get it wrong sometimes. But having a kid, no research at all, and you always can love them. Why? It is because the kid, you know you're stuck with them, you can't do anything with them. They're yours forever. You learn how to love each other. It's an unconditional love. But with a partner in life, there's many conditions to it. That's what makes it a harder relationship. But anyway, so, you know, you have this old karma. How can we improve and get beyond the old bad karma of life? And how we do that is, please understand that no one is perfect. Even Ajahn Brahm tells really bad jokes sometimes. Only sometimes, only rarely, because I'm in denial of all my bad jokes. But nevertheless, every now and again we say something really stupid. And when we do, why do we always remember that? Why do we always remember our faults? And we can find it so difficult to remember in equal measure our good qualities or the wonderful things we've done. For the past 9 days, I've been over in Jhana Grove, the other side of the road called Kingsbury Drive, teaching a meditation retreat. I was very excited because this is the first residential meditation retreat we could have after the COVID crisis. We can only have people who are actually living in Western Australia come here, but still it was wonderful to get back to some degree of normality and teach a retreat where people were resident. And we still had to keep, over here, keep 2 square meters per person in the hall, but there was plenty of room for all of our meditators. And whenever I teach a meditation retreat, I just ask people, just when you come into that retreat center, please let go of all the negativity of the past. When I went in there the very first day, because I haven't been there for a little while, I looked at all the incredibly beautiful buildings there. I realized, wow, all those years of hard work, building, constructing, gardening, and the place looks delightful, it's beautiful, it's gorgeous. And I realized that that's what I have to keep remembering. All the wonderful good karma I've done in the past, and other people have done in the past, or the great good karma that people of Singapore have done in the past, creating these places. And when you come and visit, you see them. Please just stop for a while and enjoy the good karma of all your contributions and hard work. And if you do that, I'm just looking at your hall there in the Years building in Singapore. What a beautiful hall that looks. Now, to me, when I look at the photo on my computer, it looks so well kept, very clean, very bright. Not so many people, which is a shame. But it's wonderful to see it there. And you get so much joy and happiness. Each one of you is responsible for this. And when you focus on your good karma from the past, and you really indulge in the good karma of the past, you really obsess with the good karma in the past. What it does is you want to do more good karma. It inspires, encourages you, uplifts you, and you say to people, give me some more good karma to do. Because you really get off on it. Yeah, I do talk a lot. Yeah, I do give many services, you know, all over the place, all over the world even, because, you know, during COVID time, everyone has learnt just know how to use Skype or Zoom or whatever, even just old Ajahn Brahm. I'm of that generation now that, you know, we never learnt how to use the internet that much when I was young. But now, even us oldies, we can learn just know how to communicate in another medium. And of course, hopefully you can see that even though I'm sitting still here. I always like to move my head or move something just to make sure that you know that what's talking is not a dummy. It's not a computer generated. It really is Ajahn Brahm. But anyway, when we learn the good things we've done in life, it uplifts us and feel happy. So when we say go beyond karma, especially that good karma of the past and bad karma of the past, please, the good karma of the past, please keep that. And remember all the good things which you've done. I mean, just obsess about it, or the past good things. But for goodness sake, don't ever obsess with the unfortunate karma which happens in life. And if you have done some bad karma in the past, please remember what I call the 70% rule. The 70% rule was when I was a school teacher and had to give an exam in mathematics and I didn't know what to do, so I asked the senior teacher, help! And the teacher gave me some wonderful advice, which I extended way beyond schoolwork and being a school teacher. They said that make sure the exam is not too hard, otherwise the poor old students will feel they cannot do mathematics. Don't make it too easy, otherwise the students will get nothing out of the exam when it's so easy. Aim for average score of 70%. So why 70%? Because if you get 7 out of 10, 70%, that's a reasonably good mark. So you feel you can do maths. And the 30% which you get wrong, that is information, feedback to me, their teacher. They need to study more on these parts of mathematics. Parts which I thought I taught them well, but obviously I hadn't. So I'd get the feedback and I could teach them more on those 30% and they could grow and learn more. And I thought that is so, such a good standard for life. Don't ever try to be perfect because you can't reach that standard of perfection. No one can. Don't try and be even 80%, but 70% is a very good score. It means, yes, you can do this thing called life. You can live, you can survive, but you're going to have some trouble, problems. Where you have the problems, that is where we learn and grow. The 30% of life, which is not perfect, that teaches us. That teaches us to be better, to learn from the mistakes which we make in life. So if there is some bad karma, you don't torture yourself for it and think you need to be punished. No, punishment never works. This is my experience anyway, even as a teacher. If you punish somebody, all they ever learn is not to do the act again. They learn not to get caught again. Over here in Perth, you know, people get fined for speeding by the police, but everybody has these detector devices which can detect the police speed cameras before they get caught. And you know where they get those detectors from? Singapore. They keep telling me, oh, they've got this great device from Singapore which can warn them that there's a police speed camera coming up. And that was cute. Even the guy in a motorbike in a Harley Davidson told me a couple of days ago that he had one of these devices, you know, from Singapore so that he wouldn't get caught by the police speeding. But anyway, all the punishment, all it ever does, it teaches you not to get caught again. I don't know if I told you this story, but over here in Australia, the police decided to think outside the box a little bit. Instead of punishing bad behavior by fining people, they thought they would reward good behavior. to encourage good driving. So the police were following this one man who was driving, and he was doing all the right things. Notice pausing at the stop signs and stopping and indicating when he's turning left or turning right, keeping to the speed limits. He was such a good driver that the police pulled him over and said, "Sir, I haven't come to fine you for bad driving. I've been watching your behavior. You're a really good driver. And it's my honor and joy to give you this $100 check as a reward for good driving." He said, "Oh, wonderful, thank you so much." But the policeman said, "But I also, just for our records, we have to ask you what you're going to do with your $100 check." And the man said, "Oh, wow, I've been so poor. Now I've got the $100, I'm going to apply for a driving license." And the policeman said, "Oh my goodness, you haven't driven without a..." But anyway, that was just a little joke. I don't know. You know, doing talks on Zoom, it's really difficult to know whether you understood the joke. If I'm right in front of you, I can hear you laughing or groaning or walking out or something if you don't like it. But when it's on Zoom, it's very hard to get that feedback. So anyway, I will let go of that because that's past karma. So anyway, instead of being criticized or punished for bad karma, we learn from it, we grow from it, and the good karma motivates us. And that is one way that we can overcome just our, please excuse me, but our obsession with the past. Somebody has hurt us. Somebody has maltreated us. Somebody has even stolen our money. Even sometimes they have abused us. If someone has abused you when you were young, you can't go back in the past and erase that. You cannot forget it either. It's a very strong mental impression. So how on earth can we transcend that bad, painful karma from the past? First of all, please don't blame. I don't know why they did that to you. I don't know what pressures they were under. But please remember that, you know, they will have to pay for that somewhere along the line of their life or the future lives. But as for you, because this is a talk about you, not others. As for you, the only thing which you can do which makes any sense at all is to learn, forgive, and grow from it. You know what it's like to be abused. First thing, when you have been abused, don't ever take that as a personal flaw in your character. There's many people in the world who have suffered abuse, very gross abuse. And I remember this talk I gave on Mental Health Week here in Perth to a group where they called them the clients of the mental health service. So for once I wasn't talking to the professionals, the one who serves others. These were the people who had been abused, who had suffered, you know, a rejection, violence, rape, and all sorts of terrible things in their life. And when I went up there to give my talk, many of them wondered, who on earth was this coming to tell them about some of the worst things which could happen to you in this world? But then after I told one of my stories, they all started to cry. They were weeping because they really got the power of this story. And I'm sure that many of you have heard all my stories so many times, and this is one of my favorites. I'm a forest monk. I don't learn from universities. I learn from nature. And one of the things I learn from nature, when you go for a walk in the forest, You can never, ever find a perfect tree. They just don't exist. They're all bent crooked. They've got the burnt scars from bushfires. And they've got wounds where other trees have fallen into them. Every tree in the forest, here where I live and other forests which I've visited, are always bent crooked and damaged. And I love them like that. First of all, I told these clients of the mental health service, first of all, please know that you belong to this wonderful forest called humanity. No matter what race, religion, gender, age, you belong. Just like every tree belongs in the forest. And just because you think you've been more damaged than others, we're all damaged goods. And you who've been damaged more, you become the most beautiful ones. When I go into a forest, you always have your favorite trees, the ones you like to go back to again and again and again. And my favorite trees are always the ones which are bent and crooked, which are damaged, it's got knobs on the bark and holes somewhere where the animals can live. And we have all these beautiful animals in the forest. The other day, you saw one of the bandicoots. It's an Australian animal. It's very similar to the porcupine. It reminded me of a story that someone sent me a few days ago. They say, what do two porcupines say when they kiss? You know, in love. What do porcupines say when they kiss? And the answer to that is they say, ouch. Okay, I hope you found that funny. Two porcupines are spiky and go, ouch. Anyway, just all that forest, the beautiful stuff in there. And the most damaged trees are some of the most beautiful. So I was saying that don't ever feel that there's something which you need to fix. To get beyond your old bad karma, or the karma which other people have done upon you, just realize that you cannot change what happened to you. You cannot just straighten up those trees. What you can do, just look upon those trees in a different way. Look upon the experiences which you've had in a different way. Look upon all that stuff which happened to you. Now, the bad stuff you did in a different way. Not something you need to be punished for, because if it's punishment, you tend to hide it. Who wants to admit all the terrible things they've done? I've only got a limited number of stories, but this one was a classic for me. This one Australian girl, actually not girl, a woman, and she was always dressed properly. She was obviously quite wealthy, came from a good home. Now, when she started getting cancer and it looked like it was not going to be curable, she came to see me for counselling. I counselled her day in, day out. And then it came to one day in the counselling sessions which I gave her. Sometimes you wonder why people come to Buddhist monks for counselling. It took me a long time to figure out why are Buddhist monks good counsellors. The answer is because we're cheap. Because we don't charge any money. And that's a good attraction. But it's also, we know of quite a lot. And so we can actually supply the goods. But anyway, when she came to me that one day, I realized she'd only had maybe a few weeks left of life. And I asked her, I said, what is the worst thing you've ever done in your life? What's the worst thing you've ever done? You can tell me. And so, she was not very eager to inform me the terrible things she had done. But she trusted me. And I gave her a sense of safety and love and kindness. So then she blurted it out. She blurted out the worst thing she'd ever done in her whole life. She must have been about 80 or something. He said once when she was young, when she was married, she kissed another woman's husband. She kissed another woman's husband, she said. And I said, that's all. I said, that's amazing. All those years, 80 years of age, that's the worst you've ever done. That's not a big mistake. Certainly not by today's standards. And but what was fascinating for me, because she had not told anybody or shared what she was really embarrassed about, because of that, she exaggerated it, emphasized it. And it was a huge problem for her. That bad karma, which was only small in my estimation, for her was huge. Which reminded me that when we do get some feedback by sharing even the worst thing we've ever done in the world to a person we can trust, we get that feedback, then usually we feel so much better about it. It wasn't such a bad thing after all. But when we keep it to ourselves, it grows and grows. And that bad karma becomes huge. Sharing it with a wise person means it gets lesser. That's how we transcend this stuff. So a little by little, we learn about how to deal with the past bad karma. But I don't know why is it, even I've got into this today, why is it when we talk about karma, we always tend to talk about the bad karma? What about talking about the good karma? Because this is a teaching of the Buddha. He said that any bad karma which you've done in the past is like a spoonful of salt. And if you put the spoonful of salt in a cup of water, like my cup over here, you can't taste. So you can't drink the water. It's too salty. But if you put the same tablespoon of salt in a swimming pool, you can't even taste it. And that's what the Buddha said about good karma and bad karma. If you've got lots of good karma, and you mix in the bad karma you've done amongst all the lots of good karma, then you find that you can't even notice the bad karma. It gets diluted. So one of the classic ways of overcoming, getting beyond the bad karma of the past, is to make lots of good karma. When I say make lots of good karma, you've already got lots of good karma. You've got heaps of good karma. You've got sort of huge reservoirs of good karma. But we don't make use of them. We just take them for granted. We think, oh yeah, that's nothing. Sometimes, or I make this simile. When I go to people's houses and I look at their walls, they have photographs on the walls, and the photographs on the walls of their houses when they get married, their celebration, when they pass their degree, when they go on holidays, when they go and visit their favorite monk in Serpentine, I hope. All the wonderful, joyful photographs they have on the walls of their house. But in all the years which I've visited people's houses, I've never, ever seen a photograph of you going to your lawyer to finalize the separation. I've never seen you stuck in the traffic in the morning. I've never seen you photographs on the wall studying for your exams. Passing exams, yeah, see those photographs, but not all the hard work which you did. I've never seen photographs of people in the hospital beds being sick. Yeah, when you recovered, you see those photographs. Why? It's because the photographs you have on the wall are to bring happiness to all your visitors and to yourself as well. Look at those photographs and they bring up happy memories. The more you look at those photographs and bring up the happiness of your life so far, the good karma, then the more that's going to weaken the effect of the bad karma. However, those are just images on the walls of your house. Or these days, the images which you keep on your mobile phones. But there's another mobile phone sort of, in which you keep all the bad memories. And that's often the one between your ears, your memory. Why is it when you compare what you store in your memory on your phone, what you put photographs of on the walls, why is that not the same as what's remembered in your brain? We have this attitude of, in our brain, always to remember the bad things. That's totally crazy to me. Instead of being someone who always looks on the faults of your life and keeps those faults and cherishes the faults, let them go, let them disappear, let them be dissolved in all the wonderful memories of your life so far. And that really means that it makes it much easier to live with another person. They're not perfect. This couple came to see me the other day, and she was telling me all the faults of her husband, just lazy, not sensitive enough to her. And then I asked him, what about your wife? And he was telling all her faults. And I listened to both tell all about their faults. I said, wow, you know, that I'm a sort of like a referee. I'm not biased towards any one of you, but by what you say, you know, you've both got lots of faults. I think you're a good match. You balance each other. And they never looked at it that way. And of course, they have wonderful qualities. And this is something which, you know, in my life, I find really amazing. I know these people. I know the woman. You know, she tells me all the stuff which goes on in her life. And, you know, is they really a good person? In my votes, I'd say, yeah, they're wonderful. And I know the guy. They're a wonderful person as well. I think they're wonderful people. Why can't you see what I see in you when you start a relationship? Why is it when you start a relationship, we always start to remember the bad karma, the bad things? So if you could have a fair view of your partner, not just focus on the bad, then you find it's easier to live with one another. And don't ever think that, yeah, you've got a partner, get rid of that one and get another one, get a replacement. Don't ever do that. Because partners, they're all the same. Men and women. But anyway, I'm a monk, so I'm not supposed to know about these things, but I think I know much more than people give me credit for, because I'm not so close. You can stand back and see what goes on and learn how to respect each other's good qualities. And when you're praised by those good qualities, you know, when your partner praises you and says, what a wonderful woman you are, and what a wonderful husband you are, and how lucky I am to have married you and to be with you. When you receive respect, when your partner reminds you of good karma, that changes the whole relationship. And then actually you don't get lazy and negligent. You actually get more positive, work harder to do good things. So when we remember the good karma and dilute all the bad karma in the good karma, and most people are good human beings. I say this because the human realm in Buddhism is a very high realm. You've been reborn here because you've got some really, really good karma. You're very high people. And of course, that's just ordinary people. Some human beings are born in countries with a lot of strife and poverty. And you can see that of human beings, you know, they're in the low level of human beings. They've got enough good karma to be reborn as a human, but not that much. But those born in a country like Singapore, wow, you've got great good karma. And of all the people in Singapore, those who, because of their wonderful, amazing good karma, have become members of the Buddhist fellowship, wow, you are the creme de la creme. You are the A-list. You've got such amazing good karma to be able to do this and be able to listen to a crazy monk from Australia on a Sunday afternoon like me. That's really good karma. So you're already high. So why can't we see the beauty and the goodness in ourselves? And then it's so easy to actually to be happy. And, but with the karma and transcending karma, it's, you have all the good karma and the bad karma of the past, but already I've just spent so much time thinking of and the bad karma and good karma from the past. But the most important part of karma is what you're doing about it now. What are you making with the ingredients of your life? And of course, the ingredients of your life created this moment called now. How you feel right now, your happiness, the strength of your mind. You have made that from the past. Well done. Your sickness, your weakness, or whatever it is, whatever suffering you're experiencing, that's, you made that from the past as well. So you can't change that. The most important part of karma is what you're doing about it now. Those third and fourth are those four karmas which I mentioned. The good karma you're doing now, or the bad karma you're doing now. Good karma from the past, bad karma of the past is done. You can't change that. But the karma you're doing now, you have full power to change it. To make it a good karma you're doing now. So what do I mean by that? If you're having a wonderful time this afternoon, you're feeling joy and happiness and peace right now, celebrate that. Don't sort of deny it and think, no, I don't deserve such happiness. You do. It's a celebration of all your hard work. It's like the ceremonies you go to in life. Such as you got your degree, you deserve that. You've worked really hard. Well done. You're healthy and happy right now. So you're celebrating, making good karma with the good karma from the past you're feeling now. And if it's bad karma you're feeling now, don't make bad karma by getting upset and angry at it. Why has this always happened to me? It's their fault. It's somebody else's fault. This shouldn't be this way. Why do I always have to suffer? That's complaining. Bad speech, bad thought, and sometimes even bad action. What you have to experience. So, sometimes, you know, I don't have much bad karma I have to deal with, but every now and again I'm tired and I have to give talks and I can't go to sleep because I've got to give another talk, and wow, it's just so much hard work. But have you ever seen me negative about having to give talks? No. Even if I don't feel like giving a talk, oh, it doesn't matter, I'll just give one anyway. In other words, I always learn how to make some good karma with the bad karma I have to go through. I learned that from Ajahn Chah, because an example which I'm going to give now was the mosquitoes. Because in time I was brought up in London and the University at Cambridge. You don't have mosquitoes in London. They don't suck your blood in Cambridge. They suck your brain, but not your blood. But anyway, it was first year as a monk in the northeast of Thailand, in the jungle, sitting under the trees. In nature, oh, just how romantic it feels. The reality is the mosquitoes, they bite you to death. And there was no dengue fever, there was no malaria in that area. But that didn't matter, they itched and irritated you like nothing. Because we would actually meditate just with a bare shoulder, bare head, in the jungle, no mosquito repellent, no mosquito coils, no mosquito netting, nothing. And Ajahn Chah would come and meditate with us under the trees for 2 hours every evening from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. which was mosquito dinner time. And they would bite you and another friend I was with sitting next to. We would sometimes, and this is no exaggeration, monks are good, they don't lie. The mosquitoes were biting so much, we would count them on our arm. We're supposed to be meditating, but instead we're counting the mosquitoes. And it's no exaggeration, you get to about 60 or 70 in one go. And they're so too close to actually distinguish. You couldn't resolve them. And there was a lot of mosquitoes biting you on the head, on the top of your head, on the shoulders, on the arms, on the hands. A lot of mosquitoes. It's so irritating. So we would complain to Ajahn Chah, please let us have some mosquito calls. Please, some repair. It's driving us crazy. And of course, you know what Ajahn Chah said? No. He said, but I will help you. He said, from today on, please call those mosquitoes Ajahn Mosquito. I didn't realize what he meant by that, but how wonderful a teaching it was. Because without repellent, without mosquito netting, you found another way to deal with it. And those were the meditative ways. Ajahn Mosquito taught me how to meditate properly. You're sitting there, you knew you didn't have long before the mosquitoes would find you. In those first 5, 10, 15 minutes, you could watch your breathing go really deep inside until you couldn't feel your body anymore. As I've taught meditation so often, but now you are motivated by avoiding mosquito bites to go deep very quickly. And of course I started to do that. And those 2 hours, they were just very pleasant times. I couldn't go thinking and planning and remembering and talking to myself between my ears. That thinking couldn't happen, because if it did, I would not be able to transcend my body. So because I could let go of all those thoughts and just be mindful, calm inside, naturally the attention went in, to the point where you couldn't feel the body anymore. And for 2 hours it was so peaceful and so beautiful. When I came out, the weird thing was that I couldn't see any bites on my skin. Because when mosquitoes bite, especially, you know, just a westerner, you see little bumps come up on you and they itch. I didn't have those. And straight away I thought, wow, psychic powers. Really, you can feel them and they're useful powers. Levitating is not much useful. Reading people's minds is a waste of time. As I've often said to you in Singapore in the BF, most people's minds are not worth reading. They're pretty rubbish, to be honest. But anyway, just being able to avoid mosquitoes, wow, that was a really cool trick. Then, of course, later on I found out it was science. Because all that was happening was that when you get still in meditation, your metabolism just drops. You don't need so much oxygen when you're not moving or thinking or worrying. And because your metabolism really drops, hardly any carbon dioxide is being secreted from the pores of your skin. It's that carbon dioxide which attracted the mosquitoes. When there's no carbon monoxide, then those mosquitoes couldn't find me. I disappeared. Yay! That's why I didn't get bitten. So the difficulties, the bad karma I had by just, you know, I say, what bad karma did I do to have to sit meditation in Thailand, you know, and be so sensitive to mosquitoes? I say the bad karma was I was born in England instead of being born in Asia somewhere. I must have some very bad karma to be reborn in England. Ooh, very cold country. But anyway, that's what I'm stuck with. So I managed to use Ajahn Mosquito as my teacher on how to meditate deeply. Thank you, mosquitoes. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu to the mosquitoes. But that is actually how we make good karma with the bad karma we have to work with. many times when I went to go visit prisons. I told those stories. You got some bad karma from the past. And that's what you have to deal with right now. But you can make some good karma with the bad karma you're experiencing. And that just breaks the cycle. So whatever you're experiencing, whatever ingredients of your day you have right now, you can always get something out of it. People call that positive attitude. I just call that just wisdom. You know, here you are, stuck, maybe you're poor, you lost your job. Great! You can come and volunteer for the Buddhist Fellowship. You may have just lost your partner in life. Great! You have more time to meditate. Or like, you know, when I was a young man, my girlfriend dumped me. Great! If she hadn't dumped me, I would have never been free to become a monk. Yay! Well, thank you so much, girlfriend. Whatever, you can always use what some people call painful experiences as something pleasant by making good karma from it. So even if you have a painful body, you know, I've heard me say those stories before about the food poisoning, you know, colds. And then when I have to give a talk, that time many, many years ago, I just moved to Australia and had to go to Canberra to give a series of talks. And people didn't know me at that time. And so they took me all over Canberra and just outside Canberra all day. And by the time we got back to the place I was supposed to give the talk that evening, there was no time for a shower, no time for a cup of tea. You know what it's like for me, an English monk, without a cup of tea? Oh, that was a lot of suffering. I had to give a talk. But worse, in all that busyness and cold of Canberra, it's the coldest city about in Australia. Well, it's not colder cities, but it's pretty chilly in that place. And I wasn't prepared. I got a cold. And by the time I was supposed to give the talk, there was water just dripping down my nose. My eyes were all wet. And I felt terrible. I just wanted to go to bed, not give a Dharma talk. But all these people have come to listen to me. What do you do? So I tried to give a talk. I really tried to give a talk. But all that happened was I'd say a few words and then cough. Say another few words and had to sneeze. It was one of the worst talks which I ever gave. And I saw that people weren't paying any attention. So then I said, well, we're supposed to do some meditation. Let's do some meditation now. So I paused to meditate for half an hour. And after half an hour meditation, I gave a wonderful 1 hour talk without a cough, without a sneeze. That cold had just vanished. And when I asked some of the people, what did you think of that talk? They said, well, we weren't really listening to the talk. We were just amazed. Where the heck did your cold go? You were really sick before, and now it had just vanished. Like you said a magic potion or something. But anyway, I know that that's how you can make use of even sickness, pain. So great teachers, they're ajahns. So you make good karma with the bad karma you experience. Which means that that's the way the bad karma just gets less and less and less. And that's the way you get rid of the bad mental karma of things like fear and anxiety and anger and ill will. It doesn't help anyone. So when somebody says something really terrible to me, Adebram, or Mr. Monk, stop being lazy, get a proper job. I'll turn that around and say, this is a proper job, one of the best jobs I've ever had. Being a monk, the salary is hopeless, it's terrible. And the conditions are just so long. And I don't get any retirement bonus. But I said, there's so many things wrong with the life of being a monk. But, I said, the job satisfaction is huge. And the retirement benefits of being a monk are out of this world. So anyway, you always can make something good about what happens to you in life. And that's how you get past the bad karma, not making more bad karma. with the bad karma you have to experience. Make good karma from it. Little by little, it just shows you what you can do. You can, through wisdom, through kindness, transcend karma. It's not really transcending, because karma is just such an important condition. But you can use your wisdom, your kindness, your positive qualities to make especially the bad karma so weak, the good karma so strong. And it shows you just what you can do. Little by little, the bad karma gets less and less and less. And just like time, it disappears. Because I just noticed the clock, and my time has run out. Thank you for listening. Sadhu. Are you going to say sadhu? Hello? Are you there? I told you that my talks send people to sleep. Have you all gone to sleep in Singapore?
Okay, I think we need to do this another time because Ajahn didn't hear us. Thank you, Ajahn Brahm, for the fantastic talk. Can we say sadhu three times, please? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yay, thank you so much. Very good.
An opportunity to offer you anything, so here's a virtual cup of tea.
Wow, is it the tea I like?
Hey, for you, Ajahn.
Thank you so much.
Have your permission to start the Q&A?
Yes, please do so.
Okay, do we have any questions from the floor? Okay, Ajahn, actually, we have about 500 people tuning in online.
Wow. Well done.
And so we have some questions online. May I ask
yes.
one? Someone asks, if someone is superstitious, someone is superstitious and believes in superstition, how do we make them get rid of it?
Ah, superstition. Whew. You know that it was one of my birthdays many years ago, and this person was very superstitious. They believed in horoscopes, in astrology. That was their superstition. And so, at my birthday, they employed a very well-known astrologer to do my horoscope. And at my birthday, they asked Ajahn Brahm, for your birthday gift, I spent a lot of money researching your horoscope. I got the time of your birth, the date of your birth, the place of your birth. Can I read out your horoscope? And many people are so superstitious, they believe in astrology 100%. But when he started to read out my horoscope, from this very, very well-respected astrologer, it started off by saying, whoever is born on 7th of August 1951 in London at about 5:30 p.m. in the afternoon, that this year of their birthday, the year following their birthday, would be a very, very good year for romance. And they were wrong. I'm still a monk. But all that superstition, if you are superstitious and you believe in that, a lot of times you'll make the bad things happen. You look out for them. In fact, being superstitious creates the results which you're looking for. Which is one of the wonderful things, is to not be superstitious. Instead of you may have some lump in your breast, and you think that might be breast cancer, you say, no, I'll do some chanting instead. All the time you waste chanting, you could have gone to see a doctor and get it treated. So Buddhism is not a superstitious religion. Even some of these health groups, faith healers, someone told me the story of they were desperate to get some sort of healing. And they wanted to go to this faith healer, which was very well known. Their friend said, no, don't go and see that faith healer. They're very boring. So how do you know? He said, I went to see that faith healer last week, and there was this old woman in a wheelchair sitting in the front. She was so bored that she too got out of the wheelchair and walked out. That's a joke, by the way. Anyway, all the superstition which we have, sometimes we can have encouragement. In other words, if you go towards the temple and get some chanting, that uplifts you, encourages you. It's the same as you chant your soccer team or your national team. Get everyone behind you chanting for you. That's not superstition. That obviously works. It's encouragement. So having somebody, even like wearing a little Buddha statue around your neck. This is not a Buddha statue, by the way. This is the earphones and the speaker. But anyway, there was this man who, you know, we didn't have anything to do with superstition in Thailand. But there was a man that came up to Ajahn Chah and said, I'm being drafted into the Thai army. Can you give me a little medallion, a little Buddha to wear around my neck to protect me from bullets? And it was a legitimate request. Ajahn Chah said, no, we don't do that. As Buddhist monks, we don't do that superstitious nonsense. But he said, look, Ajahn Chah, I'm so scared, I'm going to the army. They shoot real bullets there. Can I please, please, please have a Buddha to wear around my neck to protect me from bullets? And Ajahn Chah was really so kind. He was such a compassionate monk and wise too. He said, okay, I will let you have a Buddha to wear around your neck to protect you from bullets. And I guarantee if you wear this around your neck, it will protect you from bullets. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Where is it? He said, it's a 3-meter-high Buddha in the main hall. That 3-meter-high brass Buddha in the main hall, put that around your neck, and that will protect you from bullets. And that's how we dealt with superstition. Because sometimes superstition is wasting time when we could do something else to protect against the problems.
Thank you, Ajahn. But are there actually any Thai amulets that can protect from evil spirits?
No. The evil spirits, if you want to be protected from evil spirits, and I know this is truth, seen it so many times, the only thing which protects you from evil spirits is your 5 precepts. If you keep those precepts, evil spirits, they can't even come close to you. And that doesn't cost you any money. Amulets, they do cost a heap of money. And they don't work. It's fraud. It's bad superstition. But keep those 5 precepts. And your purity of mind is so strong that the lower beings, the spirits, they're lower beings than human beings. They can't come close to you. I know that. I'm a monk. I know my meditation. It's happened so many times. Seeing bad spirits try to come in, they can't. Why? Because the people's precepts is just too strong. It's a force which you can't see, but other people can.
Thank you, Ajahn. Here's another question. How do I help a young girl who has breast cancer at a young age and is now experiencing a leg fracture with possible breast cancer relapse? How do I help her family? Thank you, Ajahn. You have always been a light and inspiration to me.
Very good. So how you help her is, for goodness sake, understand that cancer is a word, not a sentence. It's an old joke, but it's a good one. It means that just because you've got cancer doesn't mean you're going to die. Most people with cancers don't die, not yet. Especially young girls, she's got lots of good energy, got vitality in her. And that energy, that vitality in her, focus on that. Don't focus on the cancer. It's only a part of her body's got the cancer. The rest of the body is fine. But if we focus on the negativity, oh, I've got cancer, ah, that negativity, that is what kills people. That fear, the anxiety, that feeling, oh, this is terrible, why me? That is what grows that cancer stronger. Instead, it's a wonderful opportunity to do one of the best therapies for cancer, which I have seen, which is to meditate, to learn how to relax, to learn how to let go of the tension in your body, in your mind, which created that cancer in the first place. I have seen so many times people with diseases like cancer, they learn how to meditate, and they do it really well because they have to. And when they get very peaceful, happy states of mind, and they go and see their oncologist. And the oncologist said, hey, your tumor's gone, or it's diminished. What have you been doing? They said, meditating, carry on. It's fantastic therapy. And it changes your life. You let go of fear. You let go of feeling you're a victim, and you are subject to all this negativity of cancers and people sort of saying you have to do this, you have to do that. People feel victims. They feel that they've got no responsibility anymore. This thing is dominating their lives. Whoever that young woman is, her to take charge. To live a happy, peaceful, beautiful life. And then don't overestimate the importance of the cancer. It is Ajahn cancer. It's teaching a wonderful lesson of life. And if you learn that lesson, you'll find that cancer will vanish.
Thank you, Ajahn. Here's another question. How can we change our worldly reality despite our limitation as human?
Well, it's a worldly reality. You're talking about the state of the whole world. You can't change the reality of the world, but you can certainly change the way you relate to it. In other words, you have COVID, you can't go here, you can't go there, which means you have to stay put in Singapore. Yay! You don't waste so much time traveling. That's what I think. That I can't go traveling to Singapore, to Indonesia and Hong Kong, all these other places I go to this time of the year. Amazing! I can actually spend more time teaching on Zoom. You adapt in different ways. I wouldn't be teaching in Zoom if I could travel to Singapore next week. So little by little, you learn, adapt, and grow. And what you thought was something which was terrible and a great limitation, you make the best of it. And you find that in life, even so many cancer patients tell me this. They say that cancer was the best thing which ever happened to them. I've never had cancer. And the first people said that, I thought, you must be mad and crazy. But then, so many people repeated that. Having cancer was the best thing which ever happened to them. I realized that that had done something to their understanding of life. And they had become such wonderful, better people. Result. The most wise, they mean it. They pass through it, come out the other side as wonderful people.
Ajahn, so sorry, can you repeat the last few seconds? We have a technical glitch. So
yeah, okay. So I have seen so much, like, first of all, cancer sufferers, they come up and say the cancer was the best thing that ever happened to them. And that shocked me at first, but then they kept on saying it. And I realized that that had changed their whole lives. It was unpleasant teaching, but they got through it, and they learned so much to change their attitude towards life. And it's the same with other things which I've seen in people, the terrible things which have happened to people, losing their partners, being sexually abused, losing their jobs. Ah, there's this one Indonesian fellow comes to mind that he was working hard for his boss, doing well in his career. And his boss called him into the office and said, you have to resign. Why? And his boss said, don't argue. Here's the paper. Resign. Why? And then that boss opened his drawer and took out a loaded revolver. Said, sign or I'll shoot you. And he meant it. So this poor Indonesian Buddhist had to resign. And he went home thinking it's almost like the end of the world. But then he decided to use all his contacts, all his knowledge, to set up a rival company. And maybe 10 years later, that company was so successful, he's a multimillionaire. And he says if his boss hadn't forced him to resign, he would never be where he is today. And he said, oh, wonderful, that's what we mean. Whatever happens to you in life, make something out of it. Make it work. It can be done.
Thank you, Ajahn. Here's another one. How do you learn not to think or perceive the flaws and bad deeds of what people have done, and thus creating more bad karma for oneself from thinking and being angry?
Yeah, thinking and being angry creates more bad karma for you. So you don't need to allow other people's bad karma to make bad karma for you. That was their behavior, their bad speech, not yours. So you let it go. And if somebody, say, steals from you, that during our range retreat, some thieves came in and they robbed our donation box in Bodhinyana Monastery. They actually stole from the monastery. So what did we do? And we worked it out, about $1,400. So what did we do? Well, you know, the donations are there for poor people. You must have been poor, so you can have it. And I told the monks, they can steal the donations, but never allow anybody to steal your happiness. Your happiness, your goodness, your forgiveness, your kindness is something which you don't have to let people steal. And of course, what happened next is when I told people we lost the money, they all gave extra donations to make up. And then we found out the insurance also made up a lot of that lost money. So actually, we even made a material profit out of it. So maybe we should invite those burglars back again.
Yeah, Ajahn. Here's another question. Is self-esteem a good ethical value? Ajahn, we have the questions are pouring in, so maybe Sis Eiling says, keep it brief.
Okay. Yes. Self-esteem is a good quality, and it leads to the self being unimportant. You start with self-esteem, then you have esteem. That's where you finish.
Another question is, what is meant by seeing Dharma and what is meant by practicing Dharma?
Seeing Dharma is seeing the cause and effects of what you need to be happy and be peaceful and healthy. And practicing it, once you see where you need to go, then of course you go there. Seeing Dharma is like, not Google Earth, but Google Dharma. So you press out where you are, where you want to go on Google Dharma, and it tells you how to get there.
Thank you. Ajahn, was it your karma that you were bitten by mosquitoes? One insect I don't mind killing in addition to flying cockroaches, maybe it's my karma to kill them so that I collect bad merits and their bad karma to get killed by me, especially after getting malaria from Sri Lankan jungles.
Oh, yeah, you got malaria from Sri Lankan jungles, but you survived. And you learned, I hope you learned a lot from that experience. But was it my bad karma? Probably. But I learned from Good Ajahn Chah how to deal with that. And so I turned a negative experience into something really positive. I really know how to meditate deeply. Ooh. Thank you, mosquitoes.
Ajahn? My mind always searches for sensuality. How can I go away from those greeds?
It is because you find something better. You get the sensory pleasure, But after a while, you get bored, you know, with sex. You get, you do actually, after a while, same old stuff. You get bored with food. You get bored with movies on TV. And then, it says it. But then you go into some meditation, you get much better pleasure. The pleasure of the mind, the sixth sense, far exceeds that of the world. Even when the king went to see the Buddha, he said, why are you a monk? You know, you could be a very wealthy king like me, enjoying yourself. And the Buddha said, I enjoy myself more than you do. Explained, the pleasures of the mind far exceed the pleasures of the senses. When you start to meditate, experience those, you put sensory pleasure into perspective. It makes it much easier to go for the higher, more beautiful, long-lasting pleasures than the transitory ones.
Thank you, Ajahn. Can you, about the 70-30% rule, can I apply this to daily life such that I'm 70% kusala and 30% akusala? As we progress further, we increase to 80, 90, and finally 100% kusala daily? Thank you.
Yeah, good idea. But you don't do that on purpose. Saying, I've done my 70% good karma now, so now that leaves me free to do 30% bad karma. Because bad karma, when you get really sensitive, you just can't do that. As the Buddha said, what is bad karma? It's like harming another person or harming yourself. Why do you want to do that? It makes no sense to me to hurt another person. Anyway, next question.
What about hurting mosquitoes? If our job requires us to kill mosquitoes, this will create bad karma. How shall we remove or eliminate bad karma? Perhaps chanting for the mosquitoes?
Yeah. See?
Thank you.
Wish the mosquitoes a happy life over into Malaysia. But not in Singapore.
Good idea. Ajahn, what is the advice Ajahn can give to those who are infected with COVID-19 and hospitalized?
Just relax. Don't be afraid. And if you have a positive mind, do some meditation. Because just because you're sick does not mean you need to. I am echoing. Hello. No, it's not echoing anymore. So, when you have any disease, it doesn't mean you cannot meditate. It doesn't mean you can't do good karma. It doesn't mean you have to be negative and afraid. And if you have a positive attitude, then you find that your immune response is far greater. And it means that the COVID symptoms get less and less. You overcome the COVID simply because you've got a strong mind. It's not just about the body. It's about the mind as well.
Thank you, Ajahn. A friend is unable to sleep for 3 months, even with sleeping pills. Is this a ripening of past karma? She's anxious and tired. What do I do? What can she do?
Well, as I mentioned already, listen to one of my talks. That should send her to sleep. But basically, don't try to get to sleep. It's a trying. And I have to get to sleep. That tightness and that tension, that keeps them awake.
How do I reconcile my love and anger caring for my loved one who is sick and very difficult? I find it very challenging to be nice to my sick loved one, even though I know it's not him who is being difficult, it's the illness.
Yeah, that's a very good reflection. When they say bad things, it's the sickness saying those words, not that person. And you know, just imagine, you know, change the roles. Imagine you're that person who's sick. How would you behave? What would you do? And if you can understand where that bad behavior is coming from, oh, you can never give anger back. Make sure also that you're not worn out and all of your spiritual resources aren't depleted. Take some time out. You get what's called respite. And then when you are not tight and tense, whatever they say doesn't really affect you that much. when you've got a guitar string and it's stretched, really, really stretched, then something hits it, bing, makes a loud noise. When the guitar string is loosened, something hits it, makes no noise at all. So that woman or that person, you're a guitar string which is so stretched that when the person you're looking after says or does a little thing, it makes a loud noise. You've lost your resilience. Resilience means you're so loose, something hits it, doesn't make any difference.
Thank you, Ajahn. How do we encourage cancer patients to be strong and positive and let go of all resentment and be happy when one always believes it's a bad karma? Thank you. How can we and give support?
Yeah, just hold a party for them. Have a big celebration. Get a brass band in or whatever else. So bring happiness where people are negative and tell them that the chances are you're going to survive. There's more people who are diagnosed with cancer survive than die. So, you know, the odds are in your favor. And to increase those odds, just, you know, do a bit of meditation, have some fun, have some joy. Look, there was this one person, I think these stories are important. There's one person, he was a smoker, and so he got lung cancer. He was, you know, from Lancashire. Had lung cancer. Eventually it was so bad, we put him into hospice, and I went to see him, and he was not supposed to come out of the hospice, but the first night in the hospice, the nurse came, "What do you want for dinner this evening?" Ted was his name, and he said, "Well, I've got diabetes, so I can't have anything sugary, I've got hardened vessels in my arteries, I can't have salt, I've got cholesterol problems, I can't have anything oily." And the nurse looked at him and said, "Ted, you're not going to die of diabetes or heart attack. You're going to die of cancer within about a week. You can eat whatever you like." He said, "Really?" "Yeah, anything oily, sugary, salty. You can eat whatever." He thought, "Wow, that's amazing." So he ordered all these foods his wife had never allowed him to eat for the past 3 years. He really enjoyed his cuisine. And he got so healthy, 7 days later, he walked out of that hospice and went back home for another 6 months. I love that story because I know Ted, it was a true story. The enjoyment, the positive energy gave him a big boost. His cancer receded. 6 months later, he went back and died properly. But those first time he went there, he recovered. With a beautiful positive energy, eating all his favorite food.
John, that's an amazing story. That's a new story for me. Thank you, Ajahn.
Very good.
Another question is, how do we gain good karma to achieve the jhana? Also, is enlightenment more blissful than jhanas?
Oh, jhana is really blissful. And you go through the jhanas, each one is more blissful than the next. Or the last, rather. And as you go further and further, it's just bliss upon bliss upon bliss. And even Nibbana, said the Buddha, Nibbanang Paramang Sukham. It's the ultimate bliss. And to understand that, there's a sutta in the Anguttara which Sariputta explained it so beautifully, but I'll leave that for you later on if you want to explore that. But what good karma do you do to get into jhanas? The good karma you do is you begin to disappear. Your sense of self gets less and less, and with it, having to do things gets less and less. So you let go of control more and more, and just to allow yourself to get peace, because where there's a sense of me, there's lots of doing and controlling. The less yourself is important to you, the less you need to do. You don't react. So you lose more and more and more your sense of identity. And that means it's so easy when you're meditating to let go. And this is what happens. As you disappear more, jhanas just become more easy. You know the path to enlightenment.
Thank you, Ajahn. How does Ajahn Brahm keep your physical body active? like meditation for the mind, but what do you do with your physical body?
Oh, I do exercises every morning. I do 10 push-ups every morning. I stand in front of the mirror. I get my two fingers and go, 1, 2, 3. I exercise my smiling muscles. Now, okay, people think that's just a joke, but getting a good mental attitude first thing in the morning is very helpful. And of course, you know, living in a forest, lots of walking to be done. And so I don't run, because run is supposed to be bad for your knees. So I do a lot of walking and thereby have a good mental attitude, and that keeps me healthy.
Thank you, Ajahn. Can we hear Dhamma from living arahants these days?
Of course you can.
Thank you. What is the bad karma produced or gave rise to the whole world that caused so much suffering and death due to the coronavirus? And how can this pandemic fade away by producing more good karma?
Oh, bad karma. Oh, maybe it's too many people in the world. Maybe too much close proximity. And so, we just get infected from one another. And just, we just so much. There's many people get COVID and they don't die. So, why? Good health, good attitude. So, look after the body. Just remember what's really important in this world. Your kindness. Good health. Balancing your life relationship. And just not getting upset at one another. Well, we waste so much mental energy. You could be watching the sunset instead of figuring out how we're going to respond to that person who was mean to us. So change people's attitudes and priorities. And because those attitudes and priorities have just really gone out of kilter, we don't really have time just to relax and just be. That means that a lot of people get sick in all sorts of different ways.
Ajahn, my son Nidhu Vara is asking if he gets enlightened, can he see the Buddha live? Thank you.
Can he see the Buddha live? Yes, because what you mean by the Buddha is explained when the Buddha said, the one who sees the Dhamma sees the Buddha. And the one who sees the Buddha sees the Dhamma. They are the same. And so if you become enlightened, if you see the Dhamma, of course you can see the Buddha, the real Buddha. While you're asking that question, sometimes people ask me, can you go on pilgrimage to the holy places, the four holy places during COVID? The four holy places people want to go to and think, it's COVID time, I can't go. Of course you can, because the four holy places where the Buddha lived is not Lumbini, it is not Bodh Gaya, it is not the deer park in Sarnath, it is not Kusinara where he passed away. The four holy places are first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, because those experiences, you actually experience what the Buddha experienced. Your mind is no different. You feel the same. So if you want to see the Buddha, experience the Buddha, that's what you do. Of course, that's mind-blowing. That gives you goosebumps. But that's true.
Thank you, Ajahn. Would Ajahn be able to take 3 more questions?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. The first one is, Ajahn, can there be neutral karma?
Of course there's neutral karma. In fact, sometimes the karma is not good or bad. It's a combination of good and bad karma, all mixed up. Predominantly good, a little bit bad. Predominantly bad, but a little bit good. And that, for example, just, you're a mum. If your son has a mosquito on them and you swat that mosquito, is that good karma or bad karma? It's killing the mosquito, but it's protecting your son from getting dengue. So it's always a combination of good and bad.
Thank you, Ajahn. Another question is thinking about Dharma teachings too much, thinking about Dharma too much, too often, does that disturb the practice?
Yeah, it does. So instead of thinking about the Dhamma, it's like thinking about a sunset when one is actually happening. So you look at the sunset, you live it rather than think about it. Because thoughts are always, you know, quite a distance from the truth. So if we're just looking at the thoughts, we're not looking at the truth. I'll say this little story. That I went to Anand's monastery, Dharmasara, some time ago. And I couldn't stay very long, just popping in. And then they asked me, can you please give us a Dhamma teaching? And I said, okay, I need to go to the toilet. Where's the men's toilet? And they all were surprised that I asked that question, because the early part of the nuns' monastery, you know, I just built it for the nuns before the nuns actually came. And so they pointed, oh, just over there, that's where the men's toilets are. So I went there, and it was true, there was a door, and it had a sign on the door, men's WC. So I was only acting, I didn't expose myself, but I pretended to urinate on the door. I said, Ajahn Bhav, what are you doing? So it says on there, men's toilet. You pointed out to me, that's a men's toilet, it's got a sign on it, so I'm urinating on the men's toilet. And they said, that's not the men's toilet, the men's toilet's inside. We should put the proper sign up, men's toilet inside. Do they do that in Singapore, when you have the toilet sign, female toilet, male toilet? Do they add the word inside? You can see how thoughts are labels, and labels can very easily be misinterpreted. Okay.
Thank you, Ajahn. Shall we take one last question? Can Vipassana meditation help according to you?
Of course, because you can't do Vipassana meditation without doing Samatha as well. You can't do Samatha without doing Vipassana. The two of them always go together. So people may think they're doing pure Vipassana, but such a thing does not exist. If you do pure Vipassana, your mind will get peaceful and calm. That's Samatha. So, Samatha Vipassana always go together. Ajahn Chah would put up his hand, now you can see the front of my hand, but the back of the hand is there, now you see the back of my hand. You can also know the front of this area as well. Samatha Vipassana, you cannot split them up.
Thank you, Ajahn. I think we shall have to close the session for the interest of time. Thank you, Ajahn, for a fantastic question and answer session. Can we say sadhu three times?
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good.
Thank you.
Now, do you want a the blessing and sharing merits?
Yes, please.
Okay. We do the sharing of merits first of all, then I'll do the blessing.
Thank you.
So we do the... We can do it all together if you wish. And please remember relations who have passed away and friends who have passed away. Idam me nyati nang hotu sukhita hontu yatayo. Idam me nyati nang hotu Sukhita hontu yatayo, idam men yatinang hotu, sukhita hontu yatayo. And now the blessing for the living. Okay?
Yes.
Here we go. Sabba Buddha Nubhavena, Sabba Dhamma Nubhavena, Sabba Sangha Nubhavena, Buddha Ratanang, Dhamma Ratanang, Sangha Ratanang, Tinnang Ratananang Anubhavena, Chaturasiti Sahasa Dhamma Kanda Nubhavena, Pitta kata ya nupavena jina savaka nupavena sabete roga sabete baya sabete antaraya sabete upadava sabete dunimitta sabete avamangala vinasantu ayuvadako danavadako siriwadako yasavadako balavadako vanavadako sukavadako hotu sabada dukha roga Vayaveva soka satu chupadava ale kantaraya piwina santu chatejasa jaya siddhi danang labang soti bhagayang sukang balang siriyayu cha vano cha bogang wudi cha yasawa satawasa cha ayu jiva siddhi bo one two three. Very good.
Thank you, Ajahn. Can we give Ajahn three bows, please? Thank you, Ajahn, for coming on to our Zoom today. It's been a great pleasure for listening to another inspiring talk. And we hope to invite you to Singapore again. And I believe in December, we have a Zoom retreat with you.
Yes, indeed.
Ramali.
Excellent. Okay. So I'll wish you all happiness and well-being. And I will check out now. Okay?
Thank you, Ajahn.
Bye, 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 BF. Very good. Oh.
No announcement. Okay. Sorry, no announcements to make.
Okay, if anybody is interested in announcements, do stay back. But if you need to go, please do. It's okay. All right, so we have the year-end retreat with Ajahn Brahm and Ajahn Brahmali. This is going to be at Orchard
Grand Central.
Grand Central Hotel in Orchard Road.
24th to 29th of December.
So there are three options, stay in, stay out, and Zoom. And they are all via Zoom because Ajahns cannot come into Singapore, right? So they're all via Zoom. So do go onto our website for more information on this retreat.
But you can practice together in the hotel to encourage each other with your Kalyana Mitta. So less disturbance from home and responsibilities. So either you take the hotel option, you can also take the conference conference room only without staying in the hotel, but that will mean you will be very tired. And the virtual one is a minimum of $68, but you can pay more because the rest will go to Bishek between BF and Ajahn's monastery. But BGF has set a minimum of 200 ringgit, which is $68. So do early bird ends on the October 31st, and so do sign up if you want.
So the common questions is, are these all Zoom? If you stay in, can you see Ajahn? The answer is no, because Ajahn cannot come into Singapore. Okay, so they are Zoom. Okay,
yeah.
But I think, as we know, the energy can flow past the waves, because I certainly felt that when he was meditating and giving us the blessings just now. Okay.
Yeah.
So do go onto our website and find out more from this poster. Okay, next week we have Sister Sylvia Bay again. And she's doing Death and Beyond, the second in the trilogy of her Death and Beyond series. This time it's going to be on multiple dimensions, many worlds. And she's going to talk about the many realms after we pass on. So highly exciting. Okay, next one. Oh, this is the next one. Okay, we have Pra Goh. He's the Vice President of Palelai Temple. we have Dr. Wong in on again, so really fantastic. Dr. Wong cannot come into Singapore, all right? So he's going to, it's going to be a recorded talk, okay? Our Sangha members are in Singapore, so we will invite them into BF, okay? So do register. On the 22nd, we have Bante Anoma. She's going to talk about the Buddhist perspective of blessings. So do blessings work? What are they? And, how do we relate to blessings? And then finally, on the 29th, we have Bante Ratanasara, our spiritual space patron, and he's going to talk about, are you a potential stream enterer? So if you want to know, do come on the 29th.
Please register only if you can make it, because as you can see, there were full, but half the people only turn up. Quite disappointing for Ajahn to see all the empty places. So please be considerate. If you can't make it, don't take up a space. Thank you.
Okay, so these are our BF Youth and Indonesian Service. If you're interested or you've got friends, do sign up. Okay, so do go on our website for more information and for registration details. And finally, please help us by donating generously so that we can continue to bring more talks to you and continue our Dharma practice. And also, the eye masks are outside. They have been blessed by Ajahn Brahm. It's a suggested donation of $5. So please pick one up as you go. Or you can come down to BF and get one when you're free. Okay? All proceeds will go to BF.
And was kindly donated by Sister Hui Kim, the mask.
Okay, for whoever is left in the hall, shall we do the closing? Let's do the arahang and then we can close. Closing homage, let us pay respect to the triple gem.
Arahang Sammā Sambuddho Bhagavā Buddhaṃ Bhagavantaṃ Abhivādemi Svakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammaṃ Namassāmi Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. See you next week.